This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by a brand new all-natural daily preventative against a host of possible inflammatory issues. Black for Health liquid extract from Future Farm Botanicals. Black for Health combines four plant-based foods, black garlic, black radish root, black cumin seed, and black peppercorn, containing high levels of body-ready healing botanicals. It's a tasty supplement with liposome complex for optimal absorption. For more information or to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's myfuture, P-H-A-R-M. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman, and from now until September 15th, buy one bottle of Black for Health and get one bottle of Elderberry with Zinc and Echinacea, half off, at MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and with me today is Layla Mutin, because it's our weekly Q&A with Layla. Wouldn't be Q&A with Layla without Layla, so Layla's here, our nutritionist in residence, to help me field questions, and together we are a brain. You know, it summates to one brain. Hopefully we'll have the wherewithal and the expertise to field your questions. Radioprogram at AOL.com is the destination for questions. And so, Layla, what's new in your world? Did you have a nice Labor Day weekend?
Oh, yes. And the weather was just so wonderful.
Yes. Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. Yeah. And very nice end of the summer.
So many in previous years. There was always a bad day, meaning very overcast or raining or something on Labor Day weekend. This was the first of, I don't remember the last time.
Yeah, it was,
so nice.
I watched the weather very carefully because I sort of plan my activities, my bicycling and swimming, especially running. It doesn't matter because you can sort of run in a windstorm or, you know, with at least a light rain anyway, I'm undaunted. Yeah. But when it comes to cycling, if it's a really windy day, it's hard work. And swimming too, you know, I have a couple of places to swim. Both are in the lee of the wind. So if it's a north wind, I go in one place. And if it's a south wind, I go in another place. And most of the weekend, it was a north wind. So it brought sort of refreshing Canadian air into the northeast. Now, a lot of people who listen to us on the West Coast are saying, what are you talking about? It was a horrible weekend. Temperatures were like 115, you know, in the shade. And, you know, and I was thinking about that, you know, that we in the northeast, I mean, knock wood, we've been spared, you know, really, really bad weather. You know, we may have a hurricane or two, you know, coming up for us on the East Coast, but so far, so good, with the exception of, you know, one windstorm, which knocked out a lot of power. And my big thing this weekend is, you know, because the pools still remain closed in New York and the gyms remain closed, I've tried to come up with a fall exercise menu, which I can execute out of the gym. And so I've been trying on, I just purchased a new wetsuit, which is great.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
I think I talked about that, top of the line wetsuit,
right.
Which I just, and it takes, you know, it's actually a little bit of a athletic event to put it on.
Oh my.
Because it's tight. But once it's, and you may say, why tight? You know, what is that? Like a vanity thing? Do you like the way you look in neoprene, Dr. Hoffman? You know, it's actually an advantage when you swim to have a skin tight, not loosely fitting wetsuit on. I mean,
you don't
fill up with water. You know, there's not a lot of pockets for the water. Now, if you're surfing or something, some people do, you know, cold water exploits wearing neoprene. You know, they may do kayaking or something like that. It doesn't matter that much because you're not actually trying to propel yourself through the water, although on a surfboard you're paddling. So you can have a more forgiving wetsuit. But this is, you know, this will hopefully take me through some of the colder water parts of the year until the pools open again here in New York. So, and then also with cycling, you know, you've got to have the right cycling clothes because when you're cycling, you're moving. And, you know, even when it's like, say, 60, that's pretty comfortable temperature. But when you're moving along at a pretty good pace, you get chilly pretty quick. So I've got like layers and, you know, various types of cycling clothes that'll take me through the season. I got the booties, I got the gloves, I got the, you know, the balaclava for the really cold weather, you know. So hopefully I'm loaded for bear for, you know, fall.
Now, wait, I have to go back to the wind direction thing you were saying earlier. So what happens when you're in one body of water and the wind direction changes?
Oh, it can do that, but generally wind is fairly consistent. It doesn't just do a 180 really quickly.
Right.
So the object is to find yourself, you know, like I'll look out the window, you know, because I have a home on the water. And the water is going to be really choppy. But usually that means it's an onshore wind. The wind is coming onshore, whipping up the waves. So I'll go to the opposite end of the island to the bay that's on the opposite shore. It's only about a, you know, 10, 15-minute car ride. And there, the water can be exceedingly placid. Conversely, when the wind is coming from the north, I'm in the lee because I'm facing south. And the water is very flat. So, you know, I look at the weather reports, kind of plan my day so that I can, you know, have a, you know, it's nothing like swimming in a, like a choppy, I mean, it's doable, but it's more effort. Yeah. So, the story of the day is from the New York Post. And it's entitled, Why Singing Happy Birthday Handwashing Song Can Spread COVID-19. You know, they said most people don't wash their hands right, you know.
Right.
So they say what you need to do is you need to sing happy birthday twice because that equates to 20 seconds. So all the little kids, they're washing their hands, they're singing happy birthday. It's kind of like a fun little thing because most of us, I mean, let's face it, we go to the bathroom, we wash our hands for what, like 3 seconds?
Yeah.
You know, we barely wet our hands.
And then wipe all the dirt on the towel.
They wipe all the dirt. So if you really want to, you know, neutralize the coronavirus, which is very susceptible to soap because it's got a lipid envelope, which is literally dissolved by the soap, and so it's neutralized, got to do 20 seconds. So it's like, look, we in medicine, we do. We know how to do this. We know how to scrub. I mean, you ever watch a surgeon, you know, an experienced surgeon scrub? And they use like brushes for their fingernails and they stand there for like a couple of minutes and they really
very
clean
methodical.
Their hands. Yeah. So, but anyway, it says, despite early advice to sing happy birthday while hand washing to ensure sufficient cleansing, health experts are now warning that the song may be a particularly potent vehicle for the spread of COVID-19. Here's how. Researchers at Lund University in Sweden observed the trajectory of aerosols emitted by 12 people singing different songs. And they discovered that consonant-heavy lyrics, such as the hard P's and B's, these are called plosives. You know, if you're like an elementary or remedial teacher, you know what these are. Because you actually, this is, kids learn their sounds and reading by repeating, you know, the consonants and vowels and so on.
Yeah.
And they're what are called the plosives, and I'm deliberately popping my P's.
Yes.
One of the cardinal rules of broadcasting is don't pop your P's.
Don't pop your P's, yes.
Because, I mean, when I see that, I see like a little red light up on my microphone here. And it means that I'm like blowing or spitting into my microphone. And it turns out that P's, B's, and T's, of which there are a lot in happy birthday, are particularly bad. Now, how do they know? They show the experiment at Lund University in Sweden. Singers sang into a funnel, and it kind of looks, you know what a dunce cap looks like?
Oh, yeah.
It almost looks like they took the dunce cap and they put it on people's face.
and they're
singing directly into this funnel, and they have like all these like electronic gadgets within there to measure aerosolized particles at the other end. And what they say here is that, so if you're going to sing happy birthday while washing your hands, it's like, make sure you wear a mask because it will capture some of the P's, B's, and T's, these plosive consonants, which abandon the song. The worst song for the spread of COVID-19 is a Swedish children's song called Bibby's Pippi Petter. That song is, that's a killer song. They need to ban that song. So there you have it. That's the latest, okay. Oh, and it, by the way, this is published in a legitimate scientific journal, of course, the Journal of Aerosol Science and Technology. And they say, there's, the bottom line is, singing does not need to be silenced, but presently it should be done with appropriate measures to reduce the risk of spreading infection. And I feel bad for the people in choirs because...
Choir singing, church, all of that. Yeah.
That's a really wonderful way to be socially. And it's also a wonderful thing for breathing. And it's a wonderful thing for the emotions. And it's just a terrific way to express worship. And a lot of people are denied that avenue. Because, you know, you sit there in a choir and you're all close together and, you know, that's there are actually some documented cases of spread. So, anyway.
And, you know, it brings us to the other matter. And I've mentioned this before when we were talking about mask wearing, where people take it off to talk. People take it off to talk on their cell phone while they're walking down the street or talk to other people. That's a problem.
But, I mean, there's a lot of mask wearing still here in New York. I think we got the memo. But, you know, I got to tell you, when I'm walking down the street, you know, I've been walking around. It's like if I'm isolated on the street and there's the opportunity for social distancing, I just find it very uncomfortable to wear the mask. Now, as a courtesy, when I get into crowds, just so to signal my compliance and to not make people feel uncomfortable, I pull the mask back in place. And certainly when I go inside, you know.
I walking around outside, I do not wear the mask where I am able to socially distance. And I, you know, and people, even other people not wearing masks, they do the same and we do the same around each other. People are really getting the message. But of course, going into the store, got to wear the mask. Or if I'm walking through a crowd, obviously that would be different. But the mask is always on my wrist. You know, ready to put on ASAP.
And have you had the experience? I know you have a relative, your sister's visiting you from Europe. Have you had the opportunity to go out to dinner at all? And, you know, there's some in Manhattan, there's all these wonderful little booths, you know, that have been set up in the street. And the weather is really nice. I mean, it's not oppressively hot. It's not too cold. So you can sit outside.
We've been out a couple of times around this neighborhood, and I have to tell you, and my sister has remarked on it too. She's like, it's so pretty with all the everything they've done out here. They've surrounded it with flowers, and
lights,
and
everything,
it's just nice.
It's special.
I almost wanted to stay.
Yeah,
except it's going to get cold, and nobody's going to want to sit outside anymore.
It's special, and you know, maybe this is just a little one of the. I mean, I'm very concerned about the future of New York, but it's, I think, one of the signs of the resiliency and tenacity of New Yorkers that we still are, you know, within the constraints that are present, still participating in civic life in a meaningful way. And had Greek food last night. It was really, really pretty out in the street.
Oh, that's nice. Greek. Wow.
There was a place next to us that was actually an outdoor jazz bar, and the jazz musicians were playing literally in the street, you know, to an appreciative audience there.
That's great.
Yep.
That's so nice.
There's ready. So let's get to questions. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions. Let's hear it.
Okay, actually, we've got a beautiful note from somebody named Paula. Dear Dr. Hoffman, I had to share this miracle you provided me. I've listened for many years. I've incorporated many of your ideas and information into my radically changed lifestyle. Last March, I injured my knee, which aggravated an injury in my back. Long story short, Dr. Hoffman, she was in excruciating pain from below her right knee to the top of her foot. And she tried steroid injection. She had some relief for a few days, but then the agonizing pain would come back.
Sounds like nerve pain. It really is
yes,
nerve pain.
Yeah. Yes. And then suddenly I remembered a program where Dr. Hoffman addressed treating diabetic neuropathy with large doses of alpha-lipoic acid.
Which is a form of nerve pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Paula says, I immediately started 3,000 milligrams divided into two doses daily.
That's a hefty dose, yeah. But that's the dose that sometimes is used in studies on diabetic neuropathy. Okay.
Yeah. So get this, Dr. Hoffman, Paula, on the first night after that dose, had 90% relief.
Woo!
On the second night, 95% relief. On the third night and since, and it's been 17 days so far, 95 to 100% relief.
Woo.
Paula says, I have my life back. Thank you. Thank you.
Wow. That's really impressive. Yeah.
So she wants to try tapering down to 600 to see if she can maintain relief with a lower dosage.
Yeah. And the answer is, you are an experiment of one.
Yeah.
And your circumstances are very individual, and it's not clear what the threshold is for pain relief. So I would suggest that you slowly taper, because the pain was so excruciating and you're achieving such a high degree of pain relief that, look, first of all, there's not a real harmful downside except for the expense. Of taking the alpha-lipoic acid. For some people, alpha-lipoic acid is a little hard on the stomach, can be. Mm. Mm-hmm. So, I guess the recommendation is take it with food, a little food in your stomach. Not always. I take it. It doesn't bother me. But, that sounds like a reasonable idea. It's, use the least amount that's going to provide you with relief. That's great.
It's wonderful. That's absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, we love to hear stories like that. Mm-hmm.
Continued relief and good health to you. That's absolutely wonderful. Wow.
Yep. And congratulations on your ingenuity to apply. It's a little bit of a extrapolation from the pain of diabetic neuropathy to the pain of some sort of injury.
Hmm. Okay. Next question is from Adriana. Adriana asks, how to treat interstitial cystitis with supplements and diet.
So interstitial cystitis is something that
it's a urinary bladder spasm, irritation.
It's sort of an inflammatory disorder of the bladder.
And there's certain acidic foods to avoid. There is an interstitial cystitis diet. You want to avoid
the IC diet.
The IC diet. You want to avoid things like, for instance, in milk and dairy products, aged cheeses, chocolate, sour cream. With vegetables, there are certain beans, lima beans, fava beans, also soybeans, tomatoes. Things like coffee, junk foods,
alcohol,
cold and
certainly.
Allergy.
Alcohol,
allergy medications, and certain vitamins even, like vitamin C.
High-dose vitamin C you might avoid.
A lot. Avoiding aged, canned, cured, processed smoked meats and fish, anchovies, things like that, things containing nitrites. Most nuts, unfortunately, are problematic. With the exception of cashews, almonds, pine nuts. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, on an IC diet, it's said to avoid not just citrus, but also cranberry juice.
Yeah. And now, which is something that helps the bladder.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Because we like cranberry for urinary tract infection, but that is completely different, wholly different from IC.
Mm-hmm. Now, also, there's a little bit of new think about interstitial cystitis and histamine intolerance. Many of the things that you mentioned are also high histamine foods.
Yeah.
And so you might also try a low histamine diet.
Mm-hmm.
You might try quercetin and or something called DAO, which is present in a supplement called Histablock. That's yes. the one that we use these days. Available through Fullscript, by the way. I think HistoBlock is on Fullscript, our supplement dispensary that you have access to.
You go to drhoffman.com and go to the store. You will find it there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you register for Fullscript. And then once you register, you have access to Fullscript products. So the other thing is, isn't there a little bit of a riff on...
calcium.
Calcium. But interesting, calcium, in this case, is it calcium carbonate that is favored?
Yeah, I believe that's the one that's favored, and I think it's in a supplement called Preleaf. And many have been helped taking something like that. I suppose you could take a supplemental calcium carbonate, but right. I'll tell you what, in my experience with our patients, they've come back to me over and over saying, I've eliminated these particular foods and the IC is gone. But if I turn around and have a cup of coffee, that glass of wine, or that aged cheese or something, it comes roaring back. So
right. So actually, there may be calcium carbonate in there, but there's also in Preleaf, there's something called calcium glycerophosphate. And so generally, we tend to think of calcium carbonate as an inferior form of calcium because it's poorly absorbed, but it may actually have a buffering effect. It's a more of an alkaline type of calcium. But calcium glycerophosphate is the secret sauce in Preleaf. It's also recommended some people take aloe vera, although I'm not sure to what extent aloe vera is really absorbed. MSM may be helpful in my experience because what we used to do is we used to infuse directly into the bladder. I remember doing this in the 1980s. We would take a vial of MSM and infuse it directly into the bladder via catheter. And the MSM had DMSO had a very soothing effect, except that it really made you stink. It gave people exude for days afterwards a very garlicky odor, such as if they get in an elevator, people would just sort of sniff them and say, "What in the heck is that?" Very obtrusive. So MSM doesn't have any of those. MSM has similar effects to DMSO as sort of an anti-inflammatory and can be taken, I think, as part of a regimen for that. I might use that.
For people who have eaten an irritating food or they've tried something new only to discover that it brought on symptoms, you could also take a little bit of baking soda and a glass of water just to get some relief sooner rather than later. Or it helps to alkalinize the urine and,
Or use a buffered vitamin C, so-called buffered iron.
Yes.
You know, omega-3 fatty acids, you know, maybe those have a little bit of an anti-inflammatory effect. But if you go to ichelp.org, that's a kind of a interstitial cystitis self-care website. It's the Interstitial Cystitis Association, so it's called ichelp.org. They have quite a lot of information about, you know, some of which is a little speculative. It's not entirely, you know, verified, but at least it's sort of the helpful tips that people use for self-care.
Okay. So, Adriana, we hope you feel better. And thank you for that question. Okay.
Yep, great.
We have an email from Aliza. Hi, thank you for the very educating podcasts. On July 9th, Dr. Hoffman interviewed Dr. William Davis, and Dr. Davis mentioned that statin drugs increase the calcium score in the arteries. My question is, should a person that was on statins for many years and recently stopped taking them due to muscle aches, should they wait a few weeks or months before getting an EBT heart scan? Or will waiting not change the effect that the statins had on the results, on the calcium score?
It's a very slow process. And
can it be reversed is the question.
Waiting does not seem to be that crucial. Okay, so interesting fact is that generally speaking, studies suggest that statins increase coronary calcification. But paradoxically, statins probably don't increase the risk of cardiovascular disease and may decrease the risk of cardiovascular disease, especially in people very susceptible. You know, and I can't deny that fact. I can't say, look, all that research is wrong. You know, they have it completely backwards, that taking statins actually increase the risk of cardiovascular disease because of this evidence about the calcium. So the calcium, right, in this case is not the determinant of how risky they are. You know, generally, mm-hmm, we look at calcium as a token of how at risk you are for cardiovascular disease. So an interesting study was just done by the makers of a prescription fish oil, which is called Vascepa. Vascepa is the ultra-potent synthetic EPA. It's just EPA, no DHA. And it's the esterified form, as opposed to the triglyceride form that you get in mostly in health food stores. And so they have a patent out on it. And the contention of the people who make it is that you can't extrapolate the benefits of that product, which has been shown to reduce cardiovascular risk by about 30%. So got to take about, mm-hmm, four a day. It's a prescription, yeah, available from cardiologists or regular doctors, and you're going to reduce your risk of cardiovascular disease if you're at risk. They did a study where all these people are on statins, because if you're at risk, you're going to be on a statin in the real world. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there were no statin deniers or refuseniks there. They all took statins. They had one group taking statins, and their coronary calcium got worse. They had another group take the statins plus the Vascepa, and it prevented the coronary calcification from getting worse.
Wow.
So the suggestion, and, you know, the
fish oil is good,
is that, you know, eating fish or fish they're saying it's the unique property of this drug that's EPA.
Yeah.
And, you know, kudos to them for doing the research. You know, they own the IP, the intellectual property around that claim, and you can't extrapolate to regular fish oil. But I got to say that to me, it's an indication that fish or, natural EPA, DHA, omega-3 products might attenuate that calcification. You know, so it's a good idea. First of all, it's a good idea. You got heart disease, don't just take a statin. Take chiolic aged garlic extract. Take fish oil. Take resveratrol. Take olive leaf extract. You know, magnesium. Take the whole panoply of things that help reduce risk.
Yes, CoQ10.
Yeah, mm-hmm. CoQ10, yeah. Certainly, if you take a statin, you got to do that, right?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm thinking. You know, it's not a matter of the timing of the test. It's a matter of, you know, doing the best you can going forward.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. Aliza, thank you for that very thoughtful question.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
All right. This is a good point at which to pause, because we divide our podcast into two parts. And surprisingly, here we are with running short on time for part one. So give us a preview of what we're going to talk about in part two. What are the questions?
Okay. Deborah's asking, do you recommend any specific supplements or foods for aging eyes?
All right. Very good. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions, and we'll be right back with more of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla.